Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. I'm Dean.
I'm Matthew.
And on this week's episode, we are talking Season 8, Episode 4, Some Guy. We got a dead tiger on our hands, pal.
Oh, man.
They murdered Sheba.
As a Clemson Tigers fan, it hurts especially. It hurts deep.
Yeah. So give me some initial, should we bury the lead or should we talk about Sheba?
I want to talk about just how I feel about this episode overall.
Go.
For one, I think this is the most fun episode so far. Even though everybody's just talking about dead Sheba and the tragic, fall of Ezekiel and his all happy-go-lucky attitude about this whole thing. But this was the most entertaining episode. Yeah, there's still some flexible shit here and there. The same stuff that we've noticed, earlier in the season. But this is a fun fucking romp of an episode. I actually really liked it. And it has a nice little dose of tragedy for our boy Zeke and Sheva. But on the whole, this is a little bit of like a fucking little, had a little nice little splash of Splinter Cell action, had some Indiana Jones.
Yeah. You broke up a little there, buddy.
Fucking good shit. I enjoyed this episode a lot.
You said Splinter Cell? You broke up a little there.
Little Splinter Cell action, yeah, with Carol inside of the building.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I'm into it, man. I had a good time.
You had a good time. Yeah, I'll tell you what, man.
Even though that tiger got all munched up, sorry.
Yeah, that was a bummer. It was a bummer for a couple of reasons, but it was definitely the best episode of the season, I think, personally. Yeah,
I would agree.
So here's the deal. I make fun of Ezekiel a lot. I do. It's one of my favorite pastimes to just bust his balls because he says dumb shit. Is it Kari Payton? I believe that's his name.
Sure.
He's great.
All right. That's it.
He's a good actor. He's a good actor.
He is. I agree.
He is. I think he is forced to do something besides be a carny man, right? Besides being like, yappa da do, la da 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 da.
Rogues and what such.
Instead of doing that song, you know the song he likes to do with his mouth? The ha ha da da dee da da ha, la da 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 pa. That song.
And my sword. Ah.
Yeah. He, instead of that song, which any asshole can do, he actually has to act pretty, he has a lot of depth to him this week, I think. And I think as The Walking Dead goes, as the crow flies, I think he is.
Yeah. As the buzzard circles, is that what you're fucking trying to say over here? You fucking asshole.
As the albatross soars, I think he is excellent here. I think he does a good job, So he's a standout for this. Why do you find that so funny?
Fuck it, you're cute when you throw it at a bone.
Go ahead.
But no, I agree. I actually agree. I'm with you. And like I've said before, like I find Ezekiel to be an endearing character, even when he's ridiculous. That's kind of why I like him. Like I was saying about his whole overdramatic raising the sword, not one rank lost, yet today I smile. Like all of that is, of course, ridiculous, but that's kind of why I found him endearing and charming. And like, as ridiculous as he was, he seems to be, at least a kind of magnanimous leader who tries to give a shit about his people, was reluctant to try and take them into war. And this whole episode is him kind of coming to terms with the consequences of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely cares about his people. I mean, there's no denying that, right?
Yeah,
but he's been kind of an interesting character. I mean, they were kind of setting you up to think Sheva was going to get out of this episode just from a story arc. I mean,
Sheva.
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling Sheva might die once I got to the dialogue with the Ace Ventura guy.
Ace Ventura.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely my biggest complaint of the episode is him and his dialogue and him saying dumb things. Like, just bad guy monologuing.
Oh, total, like, sweaty Bond villain monologuing.
Right, but he's not a Bond villain. He's a no-name guy who gets axed,
Who gets literally axed.
Like, who are you, some rando and just running your fucking mouth?
I heard your story.
Yeah, but am I such a monster? I feel like Tyrion Lannister. I wish I was the monster you all want me to be, right? Am I such a monster that that you literally laugh at me when I praise The Walking Dead now? No. Am I a monster? Am I a pariah?
I mean, a monster, yes, but no, no, it's fine.
A different, yes, you're a monster, but a different kind of monster.
Different guy. You're a Patriots fan. Yes, you're a monster. Fuck.
I can't even say good things about The Walking Dead without people. It's like everyone's waiting for the fucking other shoe to drop when I start. I didn't even say but. Mm-hmm. I said.
It's true.
I didn't.
I know, it's true. I'm okay. With you.
I said, Carrie, Kari Payton is awesome. It's cool that he got to act a little bit in this outside of just being Mr. Speeches, Johnny Speeches.
Yeah. Old Sammy Speeches over here.
Sammy Speeches. Not to be confused with old Percy Nopus. But
different guy.
Different guy. But yeah, man. So your overall impressions are that you had fun. It's funny that you use fun as a descriptor.
Help
me understand that.
Well, just the action. And I mean, and there are still flaws within the action. Like, you know, noticing and, of course, reading our listeners' Facebook comments. Like, I'm with them as far as their criticisms go of the gunplay is still kind of shaky and it's all post-effects. Mm-hmm. And those problems are still kind of there. But still, just the overall pacing of this episode, the structure of it, the bookends of Ezekiel talking to his people at the beginning and him returning to them the way he is at the end. Like, all of that stuff was just, I actually think, really well done. And it was engaging the whole time. It didn't lull, didn't have any weird, boring problems or stuff that, you know, even episodes that I've liked, I do think there are moments where scenes get stretched out a little unnecessarily at times. And I didn't really notice that this time around. It felt all pretty well stuck together. And I like how Rick and Daryl are just like a side tangent of this episode. Like, we get a little scene of their adventure, of their fucking hunting down the car in a car chase and getting it, and then back to Carol and Ezekiel and Jerry. That was cool. I like how our main character can be an entertaining side story for an episode, and it doesn't lose, you know, he doesn't lose his weight in that. And it's just like a cool action sequence, and then back to a interesting enough story about Ezekiel.
Mm. Yeah, I think for sure this. I think for sure there's good stuff here. You know, we know Rick can carry an episode. I don't think Daryl can. We know that just because he doesn't have a lot going on, not because Norman Reedus, but because Daryl, right? And I think we're seeing that Ezekiel can sort of carry an episode here, and he doesn't get to do a lot of physical fighting. I mean, he does some, but this is largely spent severely wounded and acting. You know what I mean? Like, him struggling and acting and having a dialogue and coming to grips with certain things and seeing him come to grips with these things. You know, this transformation that we're going to see in Ezekiel, it kind of reminds me of when you see these guys who say they're Zen masters, and then they have like 26 guys run at them in their class, and they're just like touching them, and the guys go flying. And then he gets the idea that he wants to have an MMA guy fight him.
Yeah,
and then the MMA guy like punches him in the face, and like you see his whole world crumble. Like, right. You're not magic, dude. And that's kind of what you're seeing here. It's not. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And that's what Zeke learned Tyson's lesson today, I think, right?
That's it, man. I totally agree. And I love that about it. Like, the brutality of the way he wakes up was fantastic. Like, that to me is also a really effective use of gore and violence in a show like this. How him waking up in this moment is such a reckoning for him, and to be like, I am the guy, you know, this isn't a scene of somebody else who maybe helped convince, you know, Ezekiel to go to war or was like a lieutenant for him. This is the man himself having to look at all of the dead people that he let in here, and not only just them all being dead, watching them, you know, reanimated zombies, which is heavy. It's a fucking heavy kick in the throat of a way to start this episode.
Yeah, sure. His boy Daniel is a walker. Everyone's dead. Seemingly everyone's dead.
His whole everybody got cut down by that gunman.
Yeah.
And to the show's credit, we talked about this last week about how, like, one, it's a little bit of a stretch that he would survive even two or three guys in front of him while those bullets from the 50 cal were ripping through. However, the wounds on the people from the bullets looked pretty fucking good. They look like they got grapefruit for shot through them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind that at all. He's just like, fuck, this is a pretty intense way to start.
Yeah, man. And do you like the opening scene? I mean, this is classic Ezekiel in the opening scene of, you know, him walking out into his people assembled to talk about going to war.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
they're fighting for.
I mean, man, we've had a lot of speeches in four episodes.
A lot of speechifying.
I mean, there's been more than one speech per episode. I think the ratio is a little off. I think this guy is a good actor. And yet I smile. There's moments when he says, and yet I smile, where even though I'm rolling my eyes at the actual content of the speech, I am applauding his delivery of the speech. You can see him. You can see it in his eyes. He gets the little lip quiver. Like he's getting emotional at his own words here. And it's nice to see some caliber acting from a guy, even if the dialogue he was handed wasn't great, which again, tells you a little bit about the guy, which is why I want to make sure to spend time praising Kerry Payton this week. Cause I think he deserves it. And I think that he did a good job here.
And I mean, I think last season suffered for having too little of him. I think he, you know, this episode, if no other, has proven, like you've already said, that he can carry an episode. His character, even if the character himself is not interesting enough, he can fucking perform it interestingly. Mm-hmm. Like he can handle this guy, this backstory, this character really well. And I feel like Carol is the most blue-balled character as far as like what is going to happen between her and other people. Like we got this little tiny pretend relationship she had with Tobin. We had seasons worth of her being maybe she will with Daryl. Like, and it all kind of came to nothing or just kind of came to a weird stalemate. I do genuinely hope to see more, even if it's not romantic, but just more of a relationship form between him and Carol. Because I got to say, man, as far as dialogue in this episode goes, my favorite scene is that moment when him and Carol are talking about choosing to be the people they are. Like that was a moment I actually really enjoyed. And I'm like, this is the kind of commonality that I don't want to just be brought up like, huh, isn't that interesting? Now moving on. Like, no, I want this to be the beginning point of something between the two of them, even if it's just a very close friendship and she becomes like a much more involved person at the kingdom. Like, I want to see more from this.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't really need a romance with Carol. We've talked about this before with this, and that's this. I think that a lot of people would be fucking each other in the apocalypse. Okay, Yes, I think the way people are hardwired, I think people are going to be just doing more fucking, and just to feel something nice. You know what I'm saying? Not because we need TV romances, but I just think that you would see more people fucking hooking up. And I know the show doesn't want to devolve into that, and it's trying to keep these characters as almost
ain't
like
no movie theaters anymore. Ain't no video games. Might as well just take out our stuff and rub our stuff together.
That's it.
Got nothing else to do.
For sure, man. Yeah, I think there would be more fucking. I think, you know, I think this show wants to elevate these people into these archetypical characters that go beyond their station in the post-apocalyptic world. But I don't know, man. I think it's high time Maggie, Carol, Zeke, Daryl, Rick. Like, I mean, I know Rick is, but you know what I'm saying? I feel like they just would be. Now, obviously, we don't want the story to be about that, and it would be hard to casually show that without the fan base freaking out and wanting to know more. So on the one hand, I think it would be realistic if people were just casually fucking. Kind of like Rosita
least.
Was with Abraham in a sense, right?
Yeah, you Abraham know? And Spencer.
Right. I don't. I guess what I'm trying to say is that on the one hand, I feel like that would be kind of normal, but on the other side, it would also make it. It put a weird wrench into the storytelling where you kind of have to address it. So I don't know.
Well, I think you like they should just imply more often that Rick and Michonne had sex. Like, I don't know. Rick comes out of the bedroom like, that was good. Stretched. Now back to business. Like something. I don't know.
Maybe because we know they're together that we can just assume that they're having sex off camera. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like once you have an established relationship, you don't, I mean, I don't need to see them fucking to know. I'm not saying I don't want to see it. I'm just saying you don't if you're trying to write a fucking show.
Yeah. You want to see that awkward, fumbly teenage sex between Carol and Eden. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't. But what I want is, but what I imagine you would see more, just more that traumatic stuff where you're hooking up. Like, I feel like you would see that in this type of environment more. Right.
I do.
You
agree.
Know?
Yeah.
But whatever, that doesn't really matter. And I guess my whole point in telling you this and talking about that part of this is just to say that, although on the one hand, I don't really think any of them really need to be like, we're dating now in the post-apocalyptic world. I don't know if Carol needs that. I don't know if Ezekiel needs that. But at the same time,
they just have a town wall where they paint. Ezekiel is now in a relationship with Carol.
Yeah, I think they're people. And I think people like to have sex with each other, with other people, right? That's why there's a bunch of other people. And there has been since people immemorial. So, anyway. Yeah, that was my only point. But, yeah, we get to the opening credits and we come in again. But you want to say something? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say just a few small, you know, things. I mean, there's some shot transitions and stuff that I really liked, man. Like, just the tracking camera behind Ezekiel as he's walking into the square of people. I feel like they lingered a little. That was cool. And they lingered a little long on Shiva in that scene. I was like, ooh, the CGI is wearing a little thin, guys. Like, she's real good for like 2 or 3 second shots, not like 5, 8, 9, 10 seconds.
And you can't light her. You can't light her too much.
Not perfectly, yeah.
You have to keep her in a dusty mix-up, which is exactly why, and you know, I know we're going to get to it, but her death was really cheesy, and it's 100% the limitations of the fucking effects.
Right, right. Yeah. But no, and then also the above, you know, looking down shot of when all of his people kind of converge on him, which was kind of cheesy in the moment of them being like, oh, let us hug him, we are all one. I still loved the transition of the town all being together and around Ezekiel, and then the corpses of his people on top of them, man. That hard cut is stellar.
Sure. Brutal. And then we come back to him struggling to get to his feet as his own people close in on him that are walkers.
Yeah, man.
You know, we haven't seen that.
Guilt. That is fucking guilt manifest. Like, that is awful.
Well, one of the reasons I think this is the best episode of the season so far is because this is, yes, you could say guilt manifest. It's also something we've never seen before.
Yeah.
We've seen instances of a character dying and coming back, and it's like, oh, fuck, we gotta kill Shane, or we gotta kill this one, or we gotta kill that one, and they're walkers now. We gotta stab them in the head. That's sad, but not your entire civilization. I mean, there's something kind of poetic about the fact that all these people are closing in on him to eat him after he was the guy who gave them hope. It's just a cool thing. I appreciate this aspect of this episode and what it's trying to say here. So there you have that.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Like, this is the direct concept. You know, he led these people into battle, and now because of the choices, because of the way he led them, they're all coming back to kill him, literally coming back to haunt him and kill him. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty dark manifestation of your choices.
Sure. Alvaro shows up. I believe that's his name. And
his name.
Yeah. And he helps him. And we get this transition shot into where the M2 is, and these guys are breaking it down, putting it in the box. We see something pretty rare, which is brass.
Seriously.
I'm just kidding.
I actually appreciated...
Dick, but there's a bunch of brass on the floor, as you'd imagine there would be.
Absolutely. And I appreciated that, you know, because the whole scene when he wakes up and is like slides out from out underneath the corpses that were on top of them, and he starts crawling to the, you know, other ones nearby and flipping them over to see if they're alive. That whole time, I was like, dude, you better get to cover. Like, they are still looking at you from that window. What the fuck? So I appreciated in that transition, we see why he's not still just getting lit up, that they're in the midst of breaking the gun down. They're not paying attention to outside anymore. They think they've taken care of it. Mm-hmm. So that was a small detail I'm glad they included. But yeah, man, him flipping everybody over with those gigantic fucking bullet wounds, finally saved by, like you said, Alvaro. It's a good scene, man. I really enjoyed the opening.
Mm-hmm. And we transition to Carol.
To our girl, man.
Yeah. So this was refreshing.
Oh, dude. Yeah, this was some yummy classic Carol I needed. I needed this.
Yeah. This is this is reminiscent of Walking Dead, you know, when it can do things well. You know what I'm saying? There's
when
definitely
it is good.
Yeah, to put it in a nutshell, right? I like that she opens up on this whole crew.
Oh yeah, she chooses such a great moment. I love that. When she just waits until they're lined up. It's fantastic.
Blows them all away. I guess she's shooting down through the ceiling tiles, which might be a touch silly. It would have been cooler if she actually had eyes on them, but whatever. But what I really like about the scene is how she comes down and finishes them off with a pistol as they're gurgling.
Oh, yeah.
I liked
with
it.
With just zero hesitation, dude.
Yep, I liked it. Yeah, and it's very matter of fact. It's nothing personal. It's just efficiency.
Yeah, got to make sure they all got head wounds.
And we kind of cut away and back to Ezekiel, where we're going to meet Ace Ventura.
All righty then.
Boy, this is a bad part of the show. This guy's rough, man.
What? He's so excited that he got speaking lines for once.
I don't understand when you get this guy up there and you go, oh yeah, yeah, this is going to work, right? Talk to me about this guy.
Yeah, man. Well, like we already said, you know, the joke about him being the monologuing Bond villain is it's just he feels like a device more than he feels like a person. And a lot of times of like, I am a way for, I don't know, for the scriptwriters to put abstract concepts into a mouthpiece and make, you know, me, you talk about your place in the world and your identity and you're a fraud. Somebody has to be here to say it to you, so it might as well be this shitty guy.
Yeah, it's brutal, man. He sucks. This is a bit of a step back for me, which is he simply exists to verbalize the things we already know Zeke considers, which right. In my opinion is the showrunner saying the audience is too fucking dumb to understand Ezekiel's struggle. So we're going to have this guy pretty much just say it straight up. I mean, it's brutal.
Pretty much straight up, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's marching him around. I mean, the one thing I do like about what the dialogue implies as far as it goes for the saviors is how, and I think this is actually smart and effective as far as what Negan and them could do, making sure that there is this entire, like, I mean, we've talked about this a lot more last season, but the way Negan runs the saviors and what they must be like, what their psychology is like, the idea of them all saying, I'm Negan, is some crazy shit. Like we've talked about that a lot, but that's an insane amount of loyalty or dedication or brainwashing, however you want to look at it, that they're willing to kind of erase their own name in these circumstances, at least when they're talking to outsiders that no, I'm Negan, we're all Negan. And I think an interesting tool of all of that is how Negan gets them believing in these stories. Like, you know, what are they talking about? I forget what they call him, but, you know, there's Rick, the widow, and the king. And there's this elaborate story, partly based in truth about, you know, who they are and what their positions are. But, like, the saviors have done enough recon to kind of pitch these elaborate propaganda stories about all three of them so that everybody, for one, is on the lookout for them, but also really strictly adheres and believes in what Negan has told them about these people. Like, this is their rallying cry, that there's this whole, this is the kid, what he's done. He's a false prophet. He's a fraud. He's led his people, you know, into war when he's not even capable of it, and blah, blah, blah. And just all this stuff that they are so, you know, there would be no situation like how when the governor approached Rick at the prisoner, where Rick is talking to them and kind of starting to get through, like that wouldn't be there. Like it's like Negan is smart enough, at least in psychology goes, to like have everybody already believing in the straw man, you know. And I thought that's kind of interesting. But as far as the actual dialogue of like, I know you, I'm like, oh, you're just annoying, man. You're just a little shit.
Yeah, Like, I get what you're saying, which is maybe Negan's approach is to make sure. I mean, I don't know. I
like the fact that he knew about his blade. Like, that's one of those things where I'm like, there's all these details that every fucking foot soldier has heard, you know, probably speechified by Negan about. He has a sword that he carried, you know, the sword in the shape of a cane. Like, there's all, like, he was so specific in all of this stuff, which I found kind of oddly fascinating.
That and people talk, right? The saviors. Oh, yeah. the Saviors deal with these people. Remember, they go to get pickups and they pick that up and they deal with these guys get back and they just bullshit when they're back at their barracks and they say funny, goofy shit. And it might get around. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't think this guy is brainwashed because Negan has a massive force and he wins. If Negan was on the ropes and losing, this guy would probably not give a fuck. He wouldn't call himself Negan anymore and he'd give up.
It's pretty much fair.
I think that's the case. But to your point, I think it makes sense to sort of try to have this homogeneous, I guess is the word I'm looking for, units where they're all trying to know that we're all doing this for our own survival as a group.
Yeah.
Instead of being a bunch of individuals running around.
Right. And a big unifying enemy that everybody can just hate, unquestionably hate together.
But if there's one thing we've said the whole time in covering the show, as far as Negan is concerned, is that he is a real bad day away from being torn apart by the wolves, right? We've said that totally. Time and again. And that's because he's too draconic. I mean, he's too brutal.
Yeah. You're just fomenting your own mutiny when you act like that. Just over time, you're feeding them.
Right. You can't just fuck guys' girlfriends and expect them not to retaliate. I mean, that's just a small piece of the puzzle.
You'll be cool with this, right? Negan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're setting yourself up for a suicide kill. Someone's going to kill you and not care that they're going to die next.
That's it.
That's just when you get that crazy with people, people will trade their lives for yours if they hate you that much.
Oh, hell yeah.
It happens in real life, for sure. It could happen on a TV show.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that. I mean, it's a brutal thing, but so, I would not mind. I guess we saw that with Sasha, true.
Despite this guy's shitty dialogue, he has, in my opinion, the best line in the episode, ironically. He says, "You got them all killed and they still follow you." I just thought that was cool. Referring to the walkers, the big herd following them. I just thought that was a clever piece of dialogue. And I feel like that dialogue by itself is so succinct that you could have used it and we would have extrapolated the rest.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
You didn't have to go into kind of the details that he goes into that are unrealistic that people wouldn't say to each other. You could have just been like, fucking king. You think you're some fucking king. This is so ridiculous. Look, you got all your people killed and they're still following you. You know, just like, you wouldn't have to go so far, so long with it.
Yeah, and I don't think you would say, I don't think you'd say something like, what'd you say? Take away the tiger, what's left? I mean, you're essentially telling us you're going to take away the tiger by the end of the episode right here.
it's a little telegraphed.
I mean, if we know that's what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. We take away the thing that makes you a king in a dramatic way that concludes this narrative. What do you got after that? Just your dreads, I guess.
Anyway.
Ooh, Karen in the chat does bring up a good. I agree with Karen. She said, "I loved when Ezekiel said, 'Does Negan even know your name?'" I like that little retort of like, does he even know who you are? You're just some fucking guy.
Yeah.
Maybe I am too, but screw you, bitch.
Sure. Well, let's talk about, do you want to talk about them kind of getting to the gate? I know we cut back to Carol. We see Carol pinned down behind that truck. The weapons play gets a little sauced up here, a little crappy.
Well, yeah, so this is, you know, she's following, because basically the guys that she cuts down in the room are then immediately reinforced. Other guys come up the stairway and she has to just run. And so she gets out of there, but she still tracks that group of guys outside because they're trying to move the big Browning 50 cals to, I guess, back to the sanctuary. Because you can piece together their dialogue that they have already heard and communicated with, the sanctuary, probably not Negan, I don't know who. But they know about the situation there, that the gates have been destroyed, that it's flooded with walkers. And so they're like, we got to get these back there to clear them out. And, you know, and there's even a quick line of like, we got enough ammo to clear out all the walkers and then some. So they're, you know, intending to clear out the sanctuary and then probably deploy these guns again elsewhere on Rick's people. Mm-hmm. So this is the priority, you know, the moving, you know, thrust of the action for Carol, you know, her storyline here is she's still trying to, her priority is to stop them from being able to move these guns. And yeah, she sneaks up. I love that she's sneaking up on them. I love her sneaking around, keeping an eye on them, being all crafty like she does. I love that shit. But then the actual gunplay erupts here, and it gets a little bit silly.
Gets thin again.
Just a little silly.
I guess thin. Yeah, it gets a little thin. First, do you want to talk about Ace getting cut in half after doing this weird thing where he puts blood on Ezekiel's face?
Dude, that was the most annoying moment to me. I was like, what even is that? Like, I'm trying to remember the exact dialogue right there. Like, right when he puts the blood on him. Hold on, I got it right here. Delusions of grandeur. I'm like, is it a known?
Alrighty then.
Is it a known thing for people who think they're kings to smear blood on their face in a pattern? Like, what? I don't get the thing. But dude, I am so satisfied with this guy's death. I am all about it. Oh, I love it so much.
Chop
Jerry
him in
just
half.
Coming up and fucking splitting him in half, bone tomahawk style. So gangster. I love it.
It's pretty.
I'm so glad to see that battle axe put to use.
It's pretty anime.
It's anime as shit, and I love it.
It's pretty comic book, I'll say that.
Just seeing we see Ezekiel's face, his reaction through the splitting apart body of that dude. That's pretty gnarly.
Yeah. So let's talk about the gunplay here is. So I was going back and forth. I don't even know who it was. I can't remember. But I was posting in The Walking Dead. I was posting different shootouts. I posted Heat, obviously not an entirely honest and fair comparison. But then I kind of posted one from True Detective Season 2 shootout, and then Susan York posted the governor's first attack video. And dude, go back and watch that and you can see a clear difference in the quality of the shootout. It's just better. It was better in season 3. I think that's season 3. Better
season
back
four,
in
actually when he attacked.
Season 3.
Is that when they 10. Go into his compound like Newberry?
That's the prison when he engages them from far away. He assassinates Axel or whatever his name was.
Axel.
He snipes him. And what I was trying to explain was when you watch, the difference that you see when you watch these is that there's a couple of moments when you're watching these guys close in on Carol and they're shooting and you just see them sort of sliding sideways while their guns make noises and flash. Right. And a huge indicator is there's no recoil and they don't blink.
True.
When you go back, when you fire a blank, you're going to blink. When you fire a gun, you're going to blink, right? And then when you go back and watch the governor, it's cool. David Morsey, like you see him, he literally blinks when he opens up with that Steyr AUG and it just pours brass all over the field. I'm like, that's cool, man. Like they were using blanks. It cuts to Rick. He's using blanks. It cuts to Maggie. She's using blanks. You can see her. Like she's huffing and puffing and gritting her teeth. You can tell that the actress is firing a gun. And that is the main difference when you watch them. The actors appear to be firing weapons in it. I'm telling you, man, it's gonna change your mood. It's gonna change your emotions in the scene.
Yeah.
Versus if you're just waving around something and after the fact they're going in digitally and adding flashes and sound, you know, and the fucking assistant director just yelling, okay, bang, 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 bang. Okay, you're shooting and cut. And you're like, okay, versus action and everyone fucking puts their fingers in their ears and it's like, and people are fucking shooting guns like the governor was back in season 3. It's just gonna look and feel a lot different.
Yeah, I guess, I'm watching the scene you're talking about right now, and you can see the governor, like, his body actually, you know, shaking.
His body is like, you can see him, like, it's fucking vibrating his whole body when he shoots. It's cool.
Dude, and like you said, you can see brass ejecting from fucking Rick's rifle. Damn it.
Yeah, dude.
I just miss it. I miss it.
Yeah, it's a lot different. There's a couple moments where it doesn't, but, like, even in that scene, like, watch Maggie. You know, it's even, you can tell Maggie's like, fuck. Like, it just puts you in a different mindset, I think, when you know you're firing blanks. And even though you know it's safe and there's a guy on set and everything's okay, there's fucking explosions happening out of tubes in your hand. Like, it's going to change the timbre of the scene to make people go, fuck, okay, right? But right, yeah, when you watch him firing, you're like, fuck, man, it's cool. It's cool. Even when he turns and he shoots the walker behind him with a pistol, you see him kind of flinch a little when he pulls the trigger. Yeah. It's wild, man. It's just a much different feel. And
I really do wonder what the fucking change was. Like, what was the motive? We talked about this a little bit last week. Like, is it saving cost? Because
I don't know.
Like, I think the people jump to that, but I'm like, I can't imagine it's much cheaper to do all of that shit as post-editing effects. Like, that's also expensive.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm not sure. Couldn't tell you. I don't know the. I don't know enough about the inside of TV making to have an answer for you. But that's why it's. And you know, I know that I am not the average fan, and I know that I have weird hangups that some people just don't, and that happens to be one of them. And I started to question myself, and I thought, am I just being an asshole because I'm down on The Walking Dead right now? Is that what I'm doing? And then when Susan York posted that, I was like, no, see, look, this is the shit right here. This is fucking cool. You cut it against these two guys in this parking depot right before they get their next bit. They're just standing there holding guns and nothing is happening. And there's just muzzle flashes and gunfire noises.
Bunch of sillies.
It just looks dumb. It's too bad, you know, because this is all at war and we want it to be all at war. And that's what we were hoping to get a little bit better. That's all. But it doesn't take away from, look, relax, everybody. Doesn't take away from Ezekiel and the positive things he did this episode. It doesn't take away from Carol stealthing around. It just takes away from the overall feeling of the combat and the action to me personally, when I know they've had much better combat action in prior seasons. When you have five more seasons ahead of you and that much more money, I imagine. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming you're financially doing better. Otherwise, why would you stay on the air? If you lose money every year, why would you stay on? Right?
Brittany in the chat. Now it's my hang up. Damn it.
Sorry.
You cannot unsee.
But it's just I don't know. There's something to be said for it. And if you want to kind of compare that, which she dropped, I don't know where she dropped it. She dropped it on our Facebook page, our Walking Dead Facebook group page. If you want to go back to it and then go to the 26 minute and 19 second spot, right around where those guys are get got, it's the difference is alarming. But anyway, I know people really love tuning in every week to hear me say the same shit over and over again. But if they're gonna keep showing me lots of weapons fire and gun exchanges and giant action, then I'm gonna continue to comment it. So that's just the way it's gonna be, bitch.
Maybe that was it. Just the fact that there's so much more gunplay in the season, it's happening so much more often that it does get more expensive than the blanks. I don't know. Maybe. It's a sucky way to have to go.
Yeah, couldn't tell you.
I do like in this moment fucking Ezekiel throwing a little bit of fight at this guy, at old shitty Ace Ventura.
Yeah, he's like, fuck this guy.
Yanks the sword out of it. I mean, I wished
you're going back in time here, pal.
Wait, did we talk about this already?
We talked about him getting cut in half. So
that's true.
We must reassemble him.
He is squished quickly back together.
And go back to his belly wounds.
Before our boy Jerry from Subway with his battle axe.
No, I'm just fucking with you. But you can say whatever you want, man.
I mean, the only thing I wanted to say about that scene only reason I brought it up is I remembered we didn't say it, is that Ezekiel fought back for a moment here. He's not totally a broken, you know, piece of shit. Like, I love how he doesn't go from being, I'm the king, dominant, to where, like, once it goes kind of bad, he's just like, well, that's it, I guess. Although it was kind of weird in the scene that when the guy was like, ah, fuck it, I'll just cut your head off and take that back to the sanctuary. That's good enough. That's proof enough. I'll still be the hero. And when he rears up with his sword, Ezekiel just kind of, like, closes his eyes and tilts his neck up. I was like, whoa. Didn't expect you to just kind of give into it.
But yeah,
he did. You know, he yanked that sword out, and I wanted so bad for him to press it just harder into his stomach as he pulled it out and just gut him.
Yeah, man, I expected more fight out of him. I do. I guess we're supposed to believe, and this is how I took all the scene, that it wasn't just that he had been mentally beaten down, but that he was very wounded.
Very wounded.
I mean, he's hurt bad, which is the only reason he couldn't fight off this little piece of shit. By the way, here's what you don't do when you want to keep somebody a hostage. Trust me, I'm a hostage expert. Don't get right close to them with your gun and be like in their face and holding the gun up to their head, because you're just asking for a grappling match around a gun. Just stay 10 feet away and keep your gun on them. They'll never get it from you ever.
Right. That's such movie bullshit.
Every movie, every TV show and movie does this. They're like,
I'm going to be intimidated. I'm going to press the muzzle of this pistol right to his head so he can yank it out of my hand and kill me with it.
Yes. Like, don't underestimate how quickly you can be taken by surprise if somebody fucking smashes that thing away. But if they're 10 feet away, they will never get to you ever. Never. You'll always have them. It's not, it's just goofy. But anyway, I mean, whatever. It's not the end of the world. This guy's a piece of shit anyway.
Piece of shit. Gets cut in half. I love it.
Cut in half. Jerry's trying to smash the axe, which can cleave nerds, but it struggles with some chain, I guess.
Can really cleave a nerd. It's a nerd nerd splitter.
It's a little known fact. It's called the nerd splitter in the DM's guide. It's a plus +5 against nerds. But that doesn't give it any special
against
properties.
Nerds and geeks of all mana.
Yeah, it doesn't give it any special properties against chains.
No.
Which is too bad, because that Jerry is
-1 on, on chain attack.
Jerry is a big boy. Don't let him fool you.
Yeah. I actually liked this building of, you know, the herd being around them the whole time. Like, he's always having to, even when he's, you know, under hostage and even when he's rescued, they're all just having to limp away from this pretty sizable mass of zombies. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed the tension of this moment of him and Jerry both being backed up against the fence that he cannot, you know, he breaks his axe handle, or at least breaks the head of the axe off on it, trying to get it off, and they can't do it. So they have to just stand there.
He sticks it in and he tries to use it as a wedge.
Yeah.
Which wasn't a terrible idea, but for sure do it on one chain at a time. But yeah, I mean, you got a herd bearing down on you. You're not thinking clearly. I'm not going to complain too much about that.
Yeah.
But it's brutal. But it's funny because we've seen, you know, Jerry has this massive axe and we see this herd, but then we'll see like seasons where Tyrese just gets a hammer and clears out 40. Like, there's just a weird inconsistency. Like, I know this is even people who are just totally, I don't know, dick riding this show. Like, even the biggest Walking Dead dick riders are like, the zombies are sometimes a little inconsistent, because a guy like Tyrese will cut through 20 with a hammer, or Morgan will cut through a mass that have Daryl trapped in a car, no problem, and pull him out of there. And then sometimes they'll be like, oh no, we can't fight anymore, we're tired. It's weird.
Yeah.
But whatever. Yeah. I do like this stuff with Carol, though. Despite the weapon shit, which we've fucking beat the shit out of that dead horse.
poor horse.
I like how she's sort of got him pinned behind this Humvee, I guess. And it's neat. She has to make a choice, whatever. Like, she's got to make a choice. I see Ezekiel and I see Jerry over there. They're up against it with a horde coming. Ezekiel is wounded to the point where he can't climb, because fucking A, I'll take barbed wire over 40 walkers any day, but he can't climb. He's that fucked up, which is what... What's his name is going to cut his head off, right? Ace Ventura was going to chop his head off.
Yeah. And just climb over the fence with his fucking severed head.
Mm-hmm. So she kind of gets in this moment where she has to decide, do I close it on these guys, which is risky. I think her caution here is realistic. If you go around the corner there with your gun blazing, you might catch one. You don't know. You don't know what they're doing. There's two of them. They have two guns. They have twice as much force as you. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. So it's a smart move to kind of slide away and go get them and whatnot. But
yeah, I kept wanting her to open up on them while they were still occupied with carrying the crates. I was like, that's your moment.
For sure.
That's when you get on them. Not when they've put that shit down and they've got their guns, you know, back all around in their hands from being slung over their shoulder. I'm like, you got to pick those moments, Carol.
Mm-hmm. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt on that, only in that when she does decide to go after them, she does get shot at by two people that were unseen to her originally. They were sort of concealed, and she's like, oh, fuck. She kind of got caught out there for a minute.
Yeah, that is true.
Maybe open up on the Humvee, the rear tires. Maybe give a couple of bursts at those tires so they can't get out of there. But she might not have even thought about it or considered it, but... She had to act fast, I guess, is my point. She made a decision to use her ammunition to save Zeke and Jerry, which I think is fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she knows full well, you know, up until she sees him, that she's on her own. Like, she can't, you know, there, it limits her options. There's no backup. There's nobody you're calling on or waiting on to really show up with you. She uses that as a bluff for a moment. And I like that. I like that scene where she lets the fucking little dingus boy who doesn't know any better. Yeah, okay, sure, come closer. I fucking have friends nearby, and I'll tell you. Gets a knife on him. It's good shit.
Yeah, yep. We get this little quick look back on, before we get to that. Don't we get a quick look in on, no, you're right. Does that happen first?
Her getting the knife?
Yeah, that happens before she makes her decision. I forgot about that. She gets overwhelmed, kind of pretends like she's going to surrender, does surrender, then pulls her knife out on that fucking guy.
And they, honestly, that was a moment I liked from the main savior dude, who was like, I'm sorry, man, but we're going to have to shoot through you. Like, we got to take her out. Like, we can't fuck around. And they fucking unload on their own dude. Like, it just kind of goes to show that they are a bunch of wolves. That don't really, there's not like that kind of camaraderie among them. They're just like, we're all assigned to do different shit together. We don't really care about each other.
Yeah, I know that that's the purpose it serves in the story, but I'm not sure why they didn't just wait her out.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, where's she going to go?
That's also fair enough.
Where the fuck is she going, man? You're not going to drive. I mean, it's a knife.
Right.
If you give me an angle, I'm going to take it. But they kind of lost their patience and just killed the fucking guy.
Yeah, I guess they just figured that.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I bet that's something Negan wouldn't be down with.
Just wasting people.
Nah, just wasting. I mean, it seems like I know he can be whatever, but I don't know if he would have been down with Iago's decision there to just open up.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but who knows?
And I mean, also, my quick math that I imagine they're doing in their head of like, well, we either start kind of surrounding her, all she got is a knife at this point, start surrounding her, and she's still just going to cut this guy's throat, and then we're going to be shooting at her then. So we're going to lose this guy no matter what. Fuck, I might as well just all shoot through him now.
Yeah, maybe. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, wow, can you imagine what it's like to be a savior then? Because because the precedent is set, like, Iago could have been the guy that got grabbed, and he wouldn't want to be shot. So it's weird that they would operate in a way to where they're not, you know what I mean? It's just a weird thing to think about.
That's it. It's like, it's a really, cohesion really matters in situations like that, or, in a life like this where you're on missions and fucking having guns and it's life or death. Mm. If you can't trust each other and keep each other's backs,
for sure,
it's kind of going to be spelling out your doom at some point.
Yep. I agree. Do you want to talk about this?
So this happens, they shoot through this poor bastard and Carol has to dive back under the cover again. So it's here where we cut back to Jerry and Ezekiel's kind of like last stand at the fence. This is the moment where Jerry breaks off the axe head and he's just like, well, shit. And he's got the axe handle. The king's got his sword and they're pretty much backed up against the fence. And I think this is the moment where Jerry's even like, thank you, sir. And he's like, for what? And he's like, for being a cool dude, because we're so fucking dead right now. This is it. Might as well get in my last pleasantries.
Mm. I like Jerry.
I like him, man. He's.
I've decided.
He was a goof, and he's still a goof, but like he's a character I find as endearing as Ezekiel in a lot of ways.
It's a good scene. Carol shows up and opens up, gives them the room they need to get moving here, right?
Yeah, and this is, of course, after she makes the choice to, she's going to have to, back off, take the pressure off of the two guys that are still alive, the two saviors, which she knows is going to allow them to escape, but she sees, Jerry and Ezekiel backed up to ruin at this point.
Yep.
She knows she's got to intervene or they're fucked.
I appreciate Carol's ammunition. She has a shitload.
She has a whole bandolier of just AK-47
just
clips.
A ton of magazines in that thing. Those are big 30-round banana mags, maybe even more. And she has a whole satchel of them, a big ammo pack around her with tons of magazines in it. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And dude, that over the shoulder shot of Carol when she finally notices Ezekiel. And actually, this is something we should note too. Like, she only notices them because Ezekiel finally kills a zombie that had a pistol on its side. Like, I had a pistol on it, like a hip holster, and he takes it off and he starts shooting some of them. And so it's only then does she even notice they're over there because of the gunfire, because, they weren't going to hear it over the sound of their own gunfire, this big, pitched battle. And so she sees them over there, and dude, the amount of zombies that are pouring on them at that point, it is pretty, it does look genuinely desperate.
Sure.
We also forgot to mention, too, how Carol got the jump on the, you know, the two dudes that we were riffing on the most about their guns looking so shitty. But she gets the jump on them by realizing that she's right next to the gate button. And you can see the zombies in profile out there banging on the gate.
Right.
She bangs that after she, you know, kills the hostage guy. After the hostage, you know, gets shot by his own dudes, and just unleashes zombies on all of those dudes. And I actually like that because you know that in that moment when they're just unloading on her, that gunfire, they can't hear that gate open. They can't hear the zombies come over the top of them. That was actually pretty dope.
Yep, for sure. And you need that. She has to. I mean, it's a great equalizer. The walker is a great equalizer when you're trying to fucking, when you're overwhelmed, outnumbered, outgunned, and you're kind of hemmed in there. It was definitely a good move by her. So Ezekiel, what do you think of Carol's little look back talking to Ezekiel about fighting? Have you ever fought before? What do you think of this conversation?
Yes. This is what I was talking about earlier that I really, really enjoyed. I like that he's basically, I mean, he's kind of doing like the guy thing of like, oh, I've been in a fight. I've done my share. But you know,
he's been fighting Whitey his whole life.
Whole damn life, holding down the Rasta man.
My whole life I've been fighting Whitey. Yeah. No, but seriously, what I like about this is that Melissa McBride is just good, a good actress. And she, you can see her, with that sort of skeptical face, like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you sure?
You kind of full of shit?
Are you sure? Like, I bet you could probably beat my ass, large man with a ton of biological advantages over me, but have you really ever been in a life and death out there in the woods kind of shit? And it's cool. I like that she asks him and I like his response. Like that he does kind of do the guy thing, but he's also pretty honest too.
Yeah, he cops to, he especially at one point, he's like, I've been training for a long time. I'm seeing like, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. I probably haven't been in as many actual combat situations as you, but I have been training. You know, I am working toward it. You know, I will will myself.
And not just training. I think what is important about this moment in this episode is when Ezekiel's point is not, hey, I'm some great fighter, but when push comes to shove, I can make the hard choice, right?
Right.
And I can make the choice to help. And that's what he recalls jumping into Shiva's enclosure.
Mm-hmm. We still never know how she got injured.
Bad news.
Unless he mentioned that.
He might have in the very season. First. Yeah, it doesn't really matter other than the fact that he went in to help her. And he could have not. And he's definitely, that's a death wish. That's a bit of a death wish to jump into a hurt animal's pen that is that big and can do lots of murder at a very rapid pace. You have to commend him for that. And I think part of this episode comes down to that. It comes down to Ezekiel being like, look, I have been training, number one, and number two, I came to a crossroads one day where I could have not went in and saved that animal, or I could have went in and saved the animal, and I went in and I saved the fucking animal. And I think that's awesome, you know?
I love the way he says it, too. He's like, I wasn't overcome by instinct. I didn't just, you know, feel it from my bones and just do it without thinking. He's like, it was only a couple seconds, but I thought about it. I had to think. I had to choose to do this. And I like that. I mean, that's something, you know, you don't hear that a lot. A lot of times, almost the more cliche thing is to hear like, oh, man, it just, you know, overcame me. I just did it without even thinking. I just did it. I like how he's like, no.
Conscious thought.
Yeah, I was fucking scared, and I had to stop and really think. Like, I'm going to get in here with this tiger. I'm going to get into this horrible, you know, maybe life or death situation, but what kind of person do I want to be? Or is it worth that risk? Should I do it? Is it the right thing? Okay, I'm going to do it. Like, that distinction of stopping to make the choice is cool, and it makes me appreciate his character, and it makes me really appreciate the kind of parallels that him and Carol both have. Like, Carol, of any person on this show, is the person who chose to be a fighter, was not a natural born fighter, was not a natural born, you know, brave, confident warrior kind of person, but she was like, I will become that person. We need another one of those people, and she did it and has followed through, maybe even too far, you could argue, but she stuck with that. And I love her recognition of that in him, in this scene. This is some of the best dialogue of the episode.
It goes back to season 5, where Carol says, I can't remember what actual episode, but it's a season 5 ep. And she's talking to Daryl and she says, you know, I used to pray that something would change. And the thing you and I harped on so much was there's nothing wrong with having faith and wanting to pray if that's what you're into. But at the end of the day, you have to get out from behind deferring responsibility to a higher power and actually try to do something yourself.
Prayer and without works is dead. It's
there you go.
From the Bible.
There you go. And Carol does that. She actively makes a decision to do that, which you're right, definitely parallels Zeke's active decision here as well.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, man. I just like the idea of even the charismatic, you know, leader who whips up all of this following because of just being, I don't know, a fun guy to follow in a way. Like he's dashing and charming and everybody likes him. But I like that in these moments when he talks about the hard decisions, he doesn't pretend that it comes easy to him. I like that. He's like, it's still scary. It's still awful. And I know the burden's even more so on my back.
Yep. So they're talking about the machine guns, getting the machine guns to Sanctuary, how that would not be a good thing. The Humvee speeds off. Carol says they're not getting to the Sanctuary. And we get this kind of cool transition into a chase scene. I thought this was a great transition. It was a cool way to link one scene with another, to have this moment where the Humvee makes it out onto the street, and then Rick and Daryl are in hot pursuit almost immediately.
I love that. You know, it starts with Carol, you know, you hear the motorcycle, you hear the sounds of more than one vehicle, and it takes for a second for it to dawn on you, but I love it. We see it on Carol's face. She's like, okay, no, that's taken care of now. We don't have to worry about that. That's fucking dope. It was a cool transition.
Very cool.
So tell me, what do you think of the old chase here, the old Indiana Jones scene?
It's all right. It's all right. It starts awesome. Like, and that's what I mean. It's such a great hinge between the two action moments, which is just, oh, cool. It's just implied that they go out and after them. So the first thing that happens that I like is that this guy opens up with the 50 cal.
Yeah. Forces
and immediately Daryl is off the road as he should be.
Totally.
That's if you want us to believe that these guns are what they are and they killed literally every one of Ezekiel's people and you don't have the same lethality applied to our favorite heroes, then you're being a fucking asshole. Don't be an asshole, show. Be cool, right?
Be cool,
show. So we have to see. As soon as he opens up, Daryl's out of the fight. I'm like, Daryl's out of the fight. His bike goes tumbling down the street. He lays it down. So I'm like, okay, cool. Daryl's out of the fight. He comes back later, which is corny, but it's Daryl shit, whatever.
You know, and I did, it's a small thing, but I love the sudden zoom on Daryl as he starts to pull out his pistol. That had some like, that's like 70s French Connection car chase shit.
It's wicked 70s. I thought the same thing.
Dude, and I love it though. Like, I love that shit. The only thing you know what actually I liked the least about this scene? The music.
What's that?
Not a fan of the music in this scene. It goes from like that kind of normal pounding, like dun, 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 and then it's like, and I'm like, are we fucking like licking an ecstasy lollipop in a 90s rave? Like, what the fuck is this music?
Jump, like, jump as high as possible.
Jump, jump, everyone jump, jumping, jumping, thrust, jumping at Zion.
Thrust your kind of skinny but oddly sexy ripped body high into the air.
Hey, everybody, this next song's called Sweaty Jumping.
Zip, jump, zip, jump, zip, jump, zip, jump, zip, jump. Yeah, there you go.
Is it basically a rehashed Sandstorm? Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much like all this shit.
I like it. Enough about the Matrix, though. So the guy opens up with a 50 cal on Rick's Jeep. I could have done without it hitting Rick's Jeep and having the same little, like, flashy effect, because we just demonstrated how powerful this gun is not that long ago.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts overall on the chase? I'll let you talk a little bit here too.
Again, this is another one of those, there are a few specific moments that might like kind of bother me a little bit more, but the overall concept of it, I think it's a fucking blast. Like, this is something we haven't gotten to see Rick do, like him pulling up alongside and diving out onto the guy and pulling out a fucking knife, stabbing him in the gut, rolling that dude out of the car. You know, when it cuts to that longer shot of the car still going, and then we see the dude tumble out, and then it, you know, tumbles over the guardrail. Such a great shot. Like, I just love it. Him diving in and just beating the shit out of this dude. That was it. That was a cool, totally fucking movie Indiana Jones moment thing, but I dig it.
I like anytime a guy jumps from one car to another. I'm just a sucker for that shit.
That's why you were so boned up for Mad Max.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
It could have just been called Tom Hardy jumps from one car to another.
I would have still went to see it.
100%.
If George Miller was directing it, I would have went to see it. But yeah, man, it was cool. I liked that part of it for sure. Are there a couple things where I ask myself, hey, guy in the 50 cal, hey, driver, just stop. And we'll just blow Rick's car away and turn him into a pile of pulp. Just stop the car and open up on him with a 50 cal. But whatever, you know, fine. It doesn't have to be that way.
One thing, another small detail that I really liked was actually when Rick, you know, I think it's Rick or Daryl. I can't remember in that moment where they bump up against their Jeep and you see the gunner actually like fall back and like struggling to get back up to the gun.
Daryl fucking shoots him. He blows him away.
Well, it's before that. It's like still shooting at him and like he gets bumped really hard and falls off the gun and has to get back to it. That's actually a thing I've wanted more of in movies. I feel like there's so many times there's a guy like a mounted gun on a vehicle on some crazy rocky mountain chase. And I'm like, dude, this guy would be struggling so hard for one to keep his aim and to like stay on top of the gun. Like that would be crazy. It would be hard to do that. And I like that they showed at least that struggle too. That like this guy off the gun.
I think he kind of cuts the wheel and fucks the guy up, which definitely you would imagine, especially since the way that gun's set up in the back of that truck is not set up the way it's supposed to be set up. He's just sort of makeshift. It's not mounted. He's not in a seat. He doesn't have it. It's not really set up properly, which was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would imagine it's not going to be purely accurate. But at the same time, just have him miss Rick. Don't have him hit Rick's truck. Just have him miss. It's fine.
Right, right.
But yeah, him jumping over and going fucking, guy goes for the pistol, and Rick has the knife. I like that. I like that little exchange. He grabs the guy's arm, stabs him in the gut. Thought that was all cool. They go tumbling off the edge. You know, that's fine too, whatever. Don't care.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, the two fucking Daryl and Rick, the two sweaty Southern hero boys just standing with the sun on their backs. Hey there. He just fucking crawls out of the crash. Yeah, I'm like, this is the moviest moment of it all. And I fucking love it. I'm like, I love it. This is some good Walking Dead shit.
Yeah. There you go.
I want it.
So let's move over to, you look like shit. It's very Butch Cassidy Sundance Kid there.
Oh, hell yeah.
Let's talk about Shiva's Last Stand.
Oh, Shiva's Last Stand. And this is also the King's most like suicidal run here, where he's like, you gotta leave me behind.
He's great. I suck now. No, he's good here.
He's good.
So I know that people are going to get mad at me for saying this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but her death was dumb. you don't overwhelm an animal like that. You don't even overwhelm our heroes like that, right? Again, we've seen men get away from more walkers than the fucking 500-pound killing animal. Now, that's not to say that she couldn't be killed by a walker with a lucky bite or something. But at the same time, the cat doesn't really allow itself to get surrounded. It doesn't clam up and just get surrounded. It fucking smack, bounds out of there, turns around. You know, it's not... And that's just limitations of CG. It's not going to just be like, oh, club me to death. You know what I mean? It just doesn't happen.
There was a part of me that wanted to just see her, you know, get overwhelmed, but still like push through it and get away from the crowd. Because I feel like that's also what
she would just barrel through there. She'd boom. Right. And she'd just leap through that whole pile.
I feel like that's what a tiger's instinct actually would be too. It wouldn't be just sit there and like swat at them overrun. It would just be like barrel out. But I would be okay if they're barreling out, but having two or three or four bites on her and then she's just bleeding and obviously going to be, you know, turning into a zombie tiger, I guess.
Like her just falling, just no way. The strength is so unreal.
Right.
It reminds me of, I've told this story before, maybe on this podcast. I don't really watch them. I don't get off on watching animals kill each other or anything like that. Does nothing for me. Right. It sucks, you know? I did watch a video once and it was on National Geographic. So I was like, oh, this won't be too bad. And it was like this male lion and it was nighttime and it had killed something and it was trying to eat this thing. And these jackals, man, fucking hyenas, which are big, scary animals in themselves. They are, and it's a night camera. So like everyone's eyes are glowing. It's cool. It's this crazy night shoot and it's all black and white. And this lion is just like fucking trying to eat. And these jackals are coming in, fucking picking at it, trying to pull it away. And the lion would be like, and you would see it like, just like charging all this dust and it fucking swipe. And then the hyenas all took off. And you're like, Jesus Christ, like the attack is so fucking ferocious. But then the hyenas took off and then they close back in and they start to surround it. And you can tell there's a point in the fucking lion where it's like, okay, they're all too close. It's time to annihilate whatever's in front of me and then whirl and annihilate everything else, right? There's no, my point is walkers don't run. There's no circling the fucking dangerous, murderous. Dude, try circling a goddamn dog with people, right? Even that's hard. But my point is,
I feel like we've talked about this before. If you have ever seen a like wildly angry and just going fucking nuts cat, five full grown men couldn't handle that shit.
Yeah, you're gonna get hurt. You're gonna get slashed
sure. So hard.
But anyway, to wrap this story up, which is taking too long, the fucking lion eventually nails one of the hyenas, and it is just it. Because what they're doing is they circle, and then the lion lashes out, and they all break away, and then they come back. And then the lion's like, okay, I'm just going to keep chasing this one. And it does, and it kills it. And then the rest of the hyenas are like, oh, cool, we're out.
Like, well, we lost Daryl, so that's where I'm at.
We lost old Daryl. He told great jokes about the lionesses in the Serengeti. And we missed.
He paid dearly for it.
But my point is, you just can't, they're just not there with CG to make that animal move as convincingly as it should when you watch them move on a fucking nature show. You're like, Jesus Christ, how much fucking ground did that thing just cover? It's nuts. Like, even that dumb video I posted on our Facebook page of the tiger jumping way up into the air.
That like and then 10 when it, foot jump.
Ugh. Dude, it jumps way up in the air, and when it lands, it bounds like 20 feet away and like easily just burn. It's like it jumps away because it doesn't want the other cat to get at the food. And that's what I mean. Like it's the limitations of CG. So yeah. I'm giving the show an out and saying, I get it. The limitations of the CG is just too much. Like you can't show what that cat can do, especially with a bunch of guys in costumes. It's going to be so hard to do it. Just look at Smeagol fighting Samwise. I mean, how hard was that to do?
Seriously.
It's crazy.
That was more of a guy.
And as a guy in a fucking suit, this is like not there. And then you're asking it to throw like actual stuntmen around. That's fucking a stretch, man. So
and, you know,
I was bummed that it was like, wax two and then gets overwhelmed. You know, it would dart out of there and sort of reassess.
All they needed to do too was show it limping, like its back leg limping from like, a hit from earlier. Like it got injured in the ambush. And it's not into full form. And like, then I could much more easily buy it being overwhelmed.
Sure. It just takes off. Like most animals, like it's, if, unless you literally can kill it, you'll see when they, if there's like a fight of sorts, they'll kind of take off and that'll kind of be the end of it. Animals don't want to kill, fight to the death. They want to eat for sure. But, it's kind of like I watched another video of these like Burmese dogs. It was like five or six of them attacking a fucking wolf. And I was like, what the fuck? And dude, I was like, oh yeah, they're going to kill that wolf. No. The wolf's flying around and it has one dead already. And it like the way it jumps and moves is just so otherworldly compared to a regular dog. And it's a fucking wolf. It's not even a giant cat. You know, a wolf is maybe a couple hundred pounds if it's massive. Right. And the cat's like 600 pounds, dude. Like they're so fast and scary.
Yeah, in closing, damn nature, you scary.
Damn nature.
How a tiger would die.
Right. It's the uncanny valley, right? We're so used to seeing these things with our fucking human eye to keep them away from our shitty huts. That we
our bamboo thatched huts.
Our fucking uncanny valley cannot be our, where there's too much instinct for us to be like, that's not right. That's wrong.
That's not the predator that stalks my children in the night.
Right. But it was heartbreaking for sure. It was sad. It was definitely sad. It served the emotional purpose it was supposed to serve.
Totally.
Which, of course, I think, I understand is the point. But at the same time, You want you again. This is just one of those things. The devil's in the details for me personally, but yeah. It serves the emotional purpose for Ezekiel, which honestly stocks up to a fucking good Ezekiel episode.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, I think it's even worse personally for Ezekiel. I mean, we talk about the catalyst for his change, his choice into being the kind of person he is, the leader he is, the fighter that he is, was in helping Shiva. And for one, it's not just that she was, you know, the reason for that, you know, behind that choice, but he's responsible for her. Like his people at the end of the day, like he rallies all the troops, but they're still making the choice to come along with him. They, you know, they could still say, I want to stay home. I have too much to lose. I'm going to stay back here with the kids. You could probably still do that. Like, he's not the kind of Negan leader who's like, no, fuck you, get out there. He rallies the troops and they choose to follow him. Sure. Shiva is an animal who is loyal to him because he helped her, and it's
a comic book animal, but yeah,
no, totally. But
yeah, but it's fine. Like
a, you know, it's a pet. It's a pet who's loyal to him, and that animal, that pure kind of animal sense, that unquestioning, unknowing.
Yeah, it takes nothing personally.
It doesn't understand the danger it's getting into by following him, by trying to track him and come back to him or anything. He knows that he's more responsible for her choice, even more so than another human being. So,
for
like,
sure. Yeah,
losing
sure.
all of his people is the worst thing, and super intense and awful. But I feel like I think he takes it even more personally seeing Shiva go. Like, I couldn't even protect her, and she trusted me blindly, like a baby, you know, like just trusted him completely to follow him, you know, into the depths of zombie hell, and she did, and he had to watch it. And he is, man, the end of this episode of him returning, that same tracking shot behind him of him limping with his fucking cane. You know, I like that.
By the way, for sure, kill a couple of those zombies that are fighting her.
He was like, let me help her. And they're like, no, you can't.
How about we all help her?
Hey, maybe we could all make a dent if we work together as a team, fucking cowards.
Oh, dude, I just thought of another crazy thing. You want to watch people try to contain a human being? Watch the fucking footage of Mike Tyson after he bites Holyfield and like the cops all end up in the ring.
Oh.
Holy shit. Dude, it's hilarious when he just like these little explosive rumblings by Mike Tyson, like, and you just see fucking people flying around. It's so funny to watch.
I gotta look this up right now.
Dude, it is so crazy. If you want to talk a tiger, god damn, man. How about just a 200-pound guy? It's really funny.
Who bites your fucking ear off?
A human tiger? I'll take off your testicles, man.
I'll fucking orphan your children.
Your kids are going to be in the nursing home when I'm done with them, okay?
Get all these fucking zombies off me. Get them off. Just fucking flinging zombies into the goddamn air.
I'm the master of disaster. My defense is impregnable. My style's impeccable. I'm going to kill your children, rip off the testicles. We get it, Mike. You're a badass.
Damn, dude. Fucking damn.
Anyway. Yeah. How about the trend? How about him walking home? Hey, where's everybody? Got everybody killed.
Yeah, where is everybody?
The whole crew killed. Whoopsies.
One thing I really like about this return home is that it's not the whole, like, Carol and Jerry aren't just, like, holding him up and, like, it's okay, we brought the king back at least. Like, it's not. Like, they're all separate. It's, like, such an awful fucking day and so traumatic and they've lost so much. Like, they're all just quiet. Like, nobody's talking. You know, Ezekiel can walk on his own at this point, at least enough to get to where he needs to go, limping on his cane. None of them are talking, and nothing really needs to be said.
Correct. Like, I liked that nothing was said.
Nothing was said. The townspeople just gets looking at him. They're like, they're fucking covering their mouths, just like, oh my god, this is it. This is all we got left.
There's a bunch of loved ones. There's a bunch of loved ones not coming home now.
And I liked that setup in the beginning of, you know, even though a couple of moments where like a little boy was putting super flowers cheese. It's cheesy.
Hey, real quick.
But it works.
It's a little cheese. Slice of cheese.
You find me a burger that ain't improved with a little bit of cheese. That's all.
Ah, hey, touche.
Got a little bit.
Yep.
You offended me a little bit, Dean. You offended me a little bit. But no, like, I like that setup. I like him seeing those same details on the zombies later. The little flowers still in her armor as her fucking guts are all over the ground and she's reaching out trying to kill you. Like, I liked the weight of all that coming back. And nothing had to be said at all. The fact that the guy, the most speechifying man alive, comes home bloodied and battered and limping and just walks past everyone and doesn't say a word, that's even more powerful and sad. Like, it's really fucking far gone.
Fucking A, man. It's good great, shit.
Man. I like this.
So, yeah, that's the episode. Do you have some final thoughts on this bitch?
One thing I'll say is that I hope this is not, you know, like last season when we were introduced to Ezekiel, he was in episode 2 and it was basically all about him and Carol. And then he was not in it at all for almost like 6 or 7 more episodes. Like, it was a long time until we got him. Well, I mean, I'm maybe exaggerating a little bit, at least 4 episodes or so. He was just out of it for a while. And everybody, I remember like all of the internet just being like, where's Ezekiel? Like, we all like him. Like, come on, bring him back. And I hope to see a lot more of him. I want him to become the center of more episodes like this every now and then. I don't need 5 a season, but shit, 2 or 3 wouldn't hurt. Like, he's an interesting enough character. I want to see him as another leader, you know, basically equal to Rick and all of them. I want to see his perspective on all of this, see him changing and see him dealing with all of this loss and how he reconciles it with still working together with Rick. And what does this mean? What does the mission mean? How much further are we going to push forward? Because also, what's one big question that this episode leaves us hanging with? Is this pretty much the end of the kingdom's participation in the war? Because they don't got nobody else. Like, it looked like that was, they had a couple standing guards at the gate and everybody else is like a weeping grandmother. I mean, what else do they got? that was kind of their forward army there. Ugh.
Yeah, I think they committed their entire troop to this effort. Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, you go.
You're trying to deliver a decisive blow to the only competition in the area. Why are you going to leave people home? Right
there, you go. Yeah,
maybe there's some sick or injured at home, or people incapable of fighting.
No, Grandma, you get up. You get up. Yeah. You're going to go out to battle.
Here's a rifle, Granny. Just wave it around. We'll put
don't worry.
Some,
don't
we'll
worry. It's got no recoil. It's fine. You can handle it.
Motherfuckers! Don't worry, Granny. Just point it over there. We'll do everything else to computers after. Oh, with computers? Yeah, with computers. It's fine.
With the AOL and the internet? Yeah, whatever.
You're going to put have AOL come out of the barrel? Yep.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
It's going to fire AOL installation CDs out of it.
We're going to dial up some fucking muzzle flash. It's going to be real nice.
Oh, good. How does this make my GeoCities website? Just keep shooting, Grandma.
Do I point my gun at the telephone? Nope. Point it over here.
Oh, fuck.
Make sure you're swinging around a lot, pointing at your friends and shit before you point at the bad guys. salty cocksucker, ain't I?
Of course. Of course.
Salty cocksucker. All right.
Salt flavor.
I will say this. This is my favorite episode of the season.
Oh, for sure.
It's definitely good compared to the rest of the season, I think.
It felt like you were just resisting saying shit.
No, it's not shit.
I know you were.
I liked it. I this actor is solid. It's cool. I've busted Ezekiel's balls in the past because of Ezekiel's dialogue, but it was nice to see the man act in a way that wasn't like he's not afraid of that thing which you already did. I'm glad that he wasn't a fucking, you know, Renfair reject, that he was really a guy in a lot of pain this episode with a lot of doubt. And it was cool to see him challenged. I liked that. And I think that he delivered. So yeah, man.
I'm with you.
I wanna give a shout out to him for sure. Well done, Ezekiel. You're the man.
Indeed.
And as I see Carol doing her shit. Carol being Carol is important.
Yeah. No, I'm loving classic Carol being back in it. Mm-hmm. More.
Yep. And then, again, Rick still has the most convincing action. Even in the brief moment.
Yeah.
There's just something about the guy. You know, he's the shit.
He's the Indiana Jones, man.
Mm. All right, man. Anything else you want to say to these lovely and intelligent people before we say goodbye?
Just keep your tigers safe, everyone. Go hug Tony tonight.
There you go. Go hug Tony. Go hug your puss, right? Pet the puss tonight, guys. You know what I'm saying? Pet. All right. We'll catch you guys next week. Bye. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out LibertyStreetGeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.